The plague descends in Pong News Podcast, episode 487. The waves unleashed. Things turn gray. Death's upon us. Pong News Podcast 487. Hey, welcome back to the Pong News Podcast. That was my ad-libbed attempt at a spooky and thematic intro. You guys know I love my thematic intros, and I meant to do one this week, but I forgot about it, so I just ad-libbed it right there. I tried to be like the Crypt Keeper meets, I don't know, Raymond Burr or something.
Is it safe for me to come out yet, John?
It's safe, and that's Tom Trauma, reviews writer.
I'm so frightened.
Tom, how you doing, man? What's happening?
Nothing much. Last week, you guys replaced me with a younger, more feminine model. How'd that go?
It went well. Em says she's coming for you. She's taking you out. She says she's in training. And she says one of these days she's going to challenge you head on to a pod-on-pod duel.
John, when the lion starts to get weak, the lion doesn't necessarily go for the fastest one in the herd. You know, it goes for the one that's lagging behind. And I might be the impala that's like got the broken leg and just sort of limping along and easy to pick off from the pack.
Or is it like Highlander? She wants to take you on because when she defeats you, then she gets your power.
Nobody gets my power. I take it with me to the grave.
Adam White, were you always annoyed in Highlander that when one Highlander kills another Highlander, he gets his power, but it always seemed as though they had the same level of power prior to killing the other Highlander than post? I never understood what the actual power they got was, except for self-satisfaction.
I'm trying. Well, self-satisfaction is a fantastic
underestimate self-satisfaction, John.
Yeah, I mean, self-satisfaction is great. But what I'd be worried is that, like, let's say M decapitates Tom and steals his power. What if the like monkey's paw curse to this?
What's my power to hate everything that came after 1995?
Sure, but what if in accruing your power she gets your hairline?
Ooh, not good for a young girl.
See, like maybe that's what happens.
I mean, it worked for Sinead O'Connor. I don't know.
Listen, boy, it's 2020. I actually see a fair amount of girls with buzz cuts these days. It's 2020. Anything rolls. You know what I mean?
John, I ain't got a buzz cut, brother. I got skin on skin.
Well, I've even seen girls with skin on skin around. You know what I mean? So listen, it's 2020, man. And
that's why I can't get too skinny at this point in my life, because people assume I've got some kind of a disease or something.
Listen, well,
keeping it chunky.
Speaking of diseases, it's the year 2020. The diseases.
I thought you were going to say, speaking of disease, the other voice you hear is Adam White.
That is Adam White. Yeah. The plague is upon us. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But a couple of things. First of all, we've got a Facebook now. So if you go to facebook.com/thepunknewspodcast, you can check out our Facebook for all the latest updates on the Punk News Podcast. And we're all going to be, you know, just randomly BSing down there and that kind of a thing. And do you guys think we should leave it as the Punk News Podcast or just Punk News Podcast? Our Facebook, that is.
Ye old Punk News Podcast.
Ye old. I like ye old.
O-O-L-D-E. Or you could go the more traditional Irish O-U-L-D-E.
There was like a whole slate of bands for a while that all wrote their names with like T-H-E-E. So we could do that. We're going to rename this show like the John Gentile dipshit hour or something in a little while anyways. So all those things will change. But I kind of liked the Punk News Podcast. It seemed unplanned and tossed off in a way that I think is very, very true to this show. It seems like John madly typed something into a box. And I appreciate that. I also kind of like the vibe that the Facebook page has right now, which is unorganized.
Minimalist.
unorganized yelling, which is again, very, very fitting for the show. It is definitely not a page where we've had a communication strategy meeting about it, John. In fact, every time you try to talk to me about it, I ignore you.
Well, that's
the thing, you know, it's doing things by committee never really works. Someone needs to rise up and seize the power. John is our own personal little Mussolini. You seize that power. I was going to say Hitler, but too soon, right?
It didn't work out too well for Mussolini, but at least he made the history books. That's something, you know. Exactly. What I mean? So listen. So anyway, check out our Facebook page. I think we're actually going to make a kind of a pop in place, and that we're not going to have a constant like stuff in there, but you know, maybe once a day, once every day, something fun, something cool. So check it out. And already a little community is developing. Some guy was already arguing with me about the Misfits. So that's something, you know.
The one thing that I want to tell our listeners that I will try to commit to doing is I am going to try to post links to the songs that we play on the show in the Facebook group, which gives you a slight bit more information than the zero information that we give you right now when we do anything. Because that's really one of the most frequent questions I get from people is like, what's that song you played? And I'm like, I don't know what episode you've listened to. What do you mean, what's that song I played? And they try to describe it and I can't remember. So I'll try to actually do that in a way that that helps people.
Well, we are making a difference. One of the listeners actually reached out to us today and said he was appreciating all the different tunes that we play. I'll mention him in the second when my Twitter loads. But you can always reach that podcast at punknews.org. So let's reach into the mailbag and see what's happening in the mail. This is from Jason, and here's what Jason has to say. For Christ's sakes, is this the Chumbawamba podcast? I hear more about Chumbawamba or Dan Berg than I do about Danzig or the Misfits. And that's saying something. Maybe the podcast should be – Maybe the podcast should be renamed the Quasi Alt News Podcast. Can we bring it back to punk, please? Tom, thanks for keeping it real and old school. And I gotta say, listen, Jason, thanks for writing. But listen, it does not get more punk than Chumbawamba. So if you're coming here to say you guys should be punk and not talk about Chumbawamba, then you've come to the wrong door, my friends. I mean, Chumbawamba is ultra punk. Check out those first like five albums. Ultra. They threw water on the Prime Minister's like number two. You know what I mean? So did Billy Joe ever
like
do that?
Number two, like his poop?
No. There were some music awards, and the deputy prime minister was like there, and they took a jug of water and like threw all over him.
That would be a great gag. Be like, we have a sack. We have a sack of the prime minister's number two, and we're going to douse it with water. I love it.
But anyways, so listen, check out Chumbawamba. I will not apologize for talking about Chumbawamba. Chumbawamba rules. And Jason, I see you spelled it wrong. It's not Chumbawamba. It's Chumbawamba. Chumbawamba, not Chumbawamba, as it's frequently mispronounced.
Everybody get that, in kids? America. Everybody get that at home? Because I didn't.
Chumbawamba. Anyways, Jason, thanks for listening. But I do encourage you to check out Chumbawamba. This is another email. This is from Turnbuckle. Here's what Turnbuckle has to say. For the 147th time, okay, I might be exaggerating. It might be the 146th time. You said that you used to get vinyl out of the dollar bin, and now that Discogs and eBay exist, it has raised the price on vinyl. But you're forgetting that while that could be true, you can never find – no, you can always find whatever you want on Discogs and eBay, and you can always know what a fair price is. Before Discogs, that wasn't true. Do you think Discogs and internet record sales overall have been a plus or minus for record collecting? And that's some Turnbuckle.
That's a good question. I think it's been both for me. It's been great because I am able to get all these obscure little 7-inches that I should have bought for like $2 30 years ago. But it's also sort of led me down a dark rabbit hole again, where I've become obsessed with collecting some of this stuff. So, there's still something to the thrill of the chase of going to the record store and finding something you really want, right?
Yeah. The thing about the thrill of the chase that is I think I romanticize the idea of the thrill of the chase more than it ever materializes in reality. For me.
Go to a record store, you always find one or two things you want, right, Adam? I mean, go to a record store and can't find something.
Well, like, rephrase that. I can go to a record store and I could find one or two things to buy, right? But I don't necessarily find, like, I very rarely have I been, like, sifting through records and all of a sudden I uncover, like, something that I do not have and I desperately want. Like, those,
Adam. Like, to me, that happens, like, pretty frequently. You know, maybe I'm not being a dick here. Maybe record shops just aren't that good or as good as like the East Coast and West Coast.
Or maybe I think you guys have different ideas. Adam, I think, has a narrower window that he's looking in. John, I think you have a little more eclectic taste, if we're being honest.
It could be.
No,
when you're looking multiple genres, you're more than likely to find something, right?
That is true.
Yeah, I just feel like I very rarely will be digging around and like uncover something from, I don't know, from some band that I've been like interested in forever and been like, oh shit, I've never found a copy of this. It's like, no, like usually, and this might be because I'm into a lot of regional music, but usually when you can't find a copy of something, it's because the other like tiny segment of the population that's into that super regional thing they've already snagged it. Right. I'm not sifting for the largest group of stuff as probably John would be. So.
I gotta say, like me, I have to say, I'm not gonna spend more than X amount of dollars if I go into a record store, because I could blow $500 in any record store. You know what I mean? Like, I love it. I can't go.
I'm kind of with you there, John. That's why I like. Okay, I'm gonna buy one or two things.
Honestly, like probably.
I don't really set a dollar amount necessarily, but
one of the three favorite parts of my week is going to the record store. I usually go on Friday or Saturday. And I adore it. And record conventions, the same. Record conventions are actually kind of wilder because you can usually get crazier stuff there. But man, I love going to the record store and seeing what's in the new bin and just coming across. But for me, the most fun part of the record store is not, oh, I'm looking for an original press of Black Flag Damage. You know, you're just flipping through and you come across something crazy or weird. You know, so I was just talking to Adam before the podcast. I was at a new record store in Westchester. It's an all right record store. It's brand new, so maybe they're improving, called Hops Fidelity. But I just came across a Dutch press of Dexy's Midnight Runners, Come On Eileen. I came across a Dutch AC/DC 7-inch, and I came across a really weird German version of an Alice Cooper album. So, like, I love – man, it's not going in the record store and looking for something specific. It's what might I come across. That being said, I agree with Tom in that, for me, it's probably a push. Whereas definitely before Discogs and eBay, I got crazy stuff out of the dollar bin. And also, like, you might get a record that's, quote, actually worth like $100 for like 20 somewhere, you know, just because it's hard to figure out what the hell it's worth. And in that context, things aren't necessarily worth any one thing just because it's not equalized. Now Discogs and eBay's equalized things. And so, like, you're not going to get to it. Once in a while you will, but generally anybody with half a brain that's selling records is going to look up on Discogs or eBay or something like that to find out what it's worth. But on the other hand, as I talked a while ago, I did get the Chumbawamba demo, Chimpy's
Banana. Oh, there you go again.
Demo tape. And I mean, like, I would never, ever, 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 ever find this in the United States, like in a record store. You're just not going to
have it. The people have spoken. They don't want any more Chumbawamba talk. Yeah, I believe each letter represents something like 100,000 listeners.
All right, then I would never have gotten my Daniel Johnston cassette tape then. How about that? So, ugh. You know, I would say it's a push. It's a push. Who's to say? Anyways,
the market is falsely inflated right now, I think. I think we're going to see, because so many people are going to be off work, the market is going to get flooded because vinyl is one of the first things that people bail on when times get tough.
That's good for you and me, Tom.
It's the same thing with the stock market, right? A lot of us are losing. I mean, my retirement, I haven't even dared look at my retirement. I mean, I'm closer than you guys. I'm only, you know, I got to retire in 20 years or something, if not less. Probably 30, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, whatever. It doesn't matter. So I haven't even looked at that. But, you know, somebody always wins when somebody else loses. In other words, you know, stocks are really cheap right now. So if you're buying, it's good, right? And the same thing with the vinyl. I think part of the problem with the whole internet thing in general and finding a good deal anymore is that when people look up internet prices, they don't take a lot of things into consideration, what press it is, what condition it's in. In other words, they'll look on Discogs and say, hey, this record's selling for $25. But yeah, your beat up copy of that John Denver record in your back closet is worth about $2, you know?
Well, honestly, a John Denver record is worth literally like 30 cents.
Yeah. Okay. Bad example, but the, you know, you don't find the dream if you have finding, you know, a Black Flag album in a original right. Black Flag album in a box of John Denver albums is probably not realistic.
Yeah. True that.
I dig through thousands and thousands of records. Sometimes if my wife and I are antiquing or something or at a flea market or something, you literally will dig through thousands of records to find maybe one you want.
So we got a message on Twitter that I just want to mention this. This is from Felonious Monk. He said, thanks to the Punk News Podcast, I am listening to artists I would never have listened to before. Working in an empty office today calls from some Lee Scratch Perry from Felonious Monk. So listen, thanks for listening, Felonious. And we'll keep playing the weirdo rarities and some of the hits as well. You can always reach that podcast at punknews.org. Who's got a song to play and then want to come back and talk about the apocalypse?
Go ahead, Adam.
Yeah, all right, sure. I'll get something that fits the weirdo vibe here. Where is it? All right, here we go. First of all, I'm going to dramatically open this beer just because no one has given me the right lead to it yet, and I would really like to drink it. There we go. So anyways, here is a song from, all right, there's a band out of Hamilton called TV Freaks that has been around for a little while. Their last record came out in 2015 on Deranged Records. It was called Bad Luck Charms. It was cool. TV Freaks is like a loud, unrelenting, buzzing garage rock band, garage punk band, let's say. And they have a front man who goes by the name of Sweet Dave. So Sweet Dave's his civilian name is David O'Connor. He's a pretty pretty awesome like traditional, I don't know what the exact name of it is, like sailor style tattooist, tattoo art, whatever you call that particular style. Anyways though, so he's a tattoo artist in Hamilton by day. So he is TV Freaks frontman. He also is a solo artist. So he released a record a few years ago called Mental Jails. And Mental Jails was billed by this goth cabaret ensemble that he put together that was called Sweet Dave and the Shallow Graves. And honestly, John, when I saw the Shallow Graves play a few times, the one thing that I kept thinking about was World Inferno. Because it's just, there were like 12 people. They were all dressed in like in kind of dark suits, and they were just it was a whole act, right? It was a whole group of people putting together these strange psyche musics, like not really like sonically World Inferno, but just as far as you had an enigmatic frontman, and then this whole I don't know show that was built around their you know, esoteric music. So Dave has his second record that just came out. It is called Pink Dreams. It is not billed to Sweet Dave and the Shallow Graves. It's just Dave this time. It takes his sort of weird, like askew new wave gothy sound in a little bit more of a, I want to say a little bit more of a pop direction, but we're being relative here. It's still pretty freaking weird. So this is a song from that album. It is called The Long Ride. It is by Sweet Dave. The vinyl for this is out on Yeah Right Records. It came out on the 13th of March, so it is fresh. It is just out there. And if you happen to hear this show prior to Friday, March 20th, which is in 2 days, which means I am, by saying that, committing to posting this show immediately, it would be a good thing to go grab on Discogs this Friday. Because John, what's happening on Discogs this Friday?
You mean Bandcamp?
Fuck. Bandcamp. Yes. Jesus Christ. Yes, Bandcamp. Wow. All right.
On Bandcamp, this Friday, Bandcamp is waiving all their fees. So if you buy something from an artist this Friday, it goes directly to the artist, because many artists, and we're going to talk about this, many artists and bands are hurting very much from the quarantine due to coronavirus.
Right. So if you go to buy anything on Bandcamp, not Discogs, Bandcamp, this Friday, the artists get all the money. So that's pretty good. So anyways, here you go. So this is The Long Ride by Sweet Dave. We'll be back.
that was Sweet Dave doing the long ride. Listen, boys, we mentioned it before the break, and we've been alluding to it all episode long. Boys, it is the end of the world, at least as far as artists. As I'm sure everybody knows, the entire world is, I don't want to label it a panic, but concerned about the coronavirus, at least in Philadelphia, New York, and I think most of the U.S. states. Tom, you might be able to comment on this. And actually, I think Adam's got the same thing. All stores are closed. All stores are closed except for grocery stores, pharmacies, and maybe a couple other emergency type things. I think mechanics are still open, gas stations, but like stores, all the record shops are closed by order of the state or the states, depending on the state.
See, now we haven't got that yet. I mean, we bars and restaurants, movie theaters. I can tell you for a fact that tattoo parlors are still open.
Pretty much,
because I visited one today, and I can also tell you that gun shops are still open because my dad's still open.
Pretty much. I thought your dad was the mayor.
You have to be
This town is like 4,500. It's like Mayberry. I mean, you can own a gun shop and be mayor. It's mayor is not a full time job.
Oh, yeah, I'm imagining Tom's dad in like Mad Max, like we need help from the mayor, and they go to like this gun shop, and he's got like this rad, like jacked out vehicle. He's got like this huge shotgun. It's time for the mayor to take out the trash.
Anyway, so actually, hold on, but John, let's interject into your intro here and just contextualize, I think, what everyone's individual shit is, because we each live in a different place, and I'm curious to kind of compare and contrast here. So, John, Philadelphia, what's like? How locked down are you guys right now?
Pretty much everything's like locked down. Like pretty much every shop is locked down except for grocery stores and that kind of a thing. Nightclubs totally canceled by, and no one knows for how long. 2 weeks, maybe 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks. Nobody knows. All the artists are, and all the bartenders and all the people that do any of those kind of related jobs are all kind of panicking, rightfully so, that they don't have a job. And honestly, like, and I think most people admit a lot of those kinds of people. A lot of those people that work in those jobs don't have a ton of savings because it's kind of hard to make savings in those kind of jobs. And so they're like kind of freaking out and they don't know what to do. There's very much two sides of the coin here. On one side, you have people saying, don't be greedy. We don't care if you think you're tough or brave. Don't go out and spread the virus and get everyone else sick or old people sick. On the other side, you see a lot of like artists and bartenders and that kind of thing is, we need to make a living. This is overreaction. You're literally causing us to go broke and getting evicted. We need to make money, and you're stopping us. This is overreaction. Not to mention every tour that's gone through Philadelphia for the next 2 months is canceled. Like everything. And not only that, is Punk Rock Bowling was holding out. They just canceled last night, and they were holding out long after all the other festivals. So this is a big deal, at least on the East Coast and out in Vegas for sure. The casinos are closed. That's a big deal.
So we just had our first death. And it is in the county. No, it's in our county now, too. We had our first death in Michigan. Person was in their 50s, but had some other issues. And that's one of the things with this is, yeah, I'm not so worried about getting it and dying as I am giving it to someone else. So we are trying to be cautious of that. But like our stores haven't been forced to close yet. But like movie theaters are closed. Churches are closed, which is unprecedented, I think. They can't. Festivals and everything leading up to everything. My job, unfortunately, is what's considered essential infrastructure. So I am still going to work, which is good, I guess. I won't have any financial ramifications for that. But like my wife runs a small business that definitely deals with elderly people to a certain extent, and they're not going to go into any situation where they can infect somebody who's, you know, older. So we're definitely gonna take a little bit of a hit. I mean, we're a better position than most people. We'll ride it out, but it's sort of crazy, dude. I mean, they're not really calling it martial law, but the fact of the matter is we're on the brink of what is really martial law. Eventually movement may start to be restricted. That would be the last kind of thing to happen, right?
The situation in Ontario is, it feels like every day they ratchet up the
restrictions, that's the thing, right?
Which has been fascinating to see. And I was even like, I was late editing last week's show, and what we were talking about as far as the virus on last week's show seems like quaint and like it's from 3 months ago. So right now in Ontario, anything that is that could be considered like a public gathering type thing has been totally canceled. Like restaurants are closed and all that. I don't think you're allowed to have a gathering that has more than 50 people at it right now. I mean, I don't know how they enforce that, but that's the that was one of the things that I'd heard. I mean, I live in Niagara Falls.
At least how they enforce it, they call Tom's dad. Mayor, we need to have a public gathering. I'll take care of this.
Rides in on a dune buggy.
You're shut down. He's like McBain.
So I'm in Niagara Falls, right? Which is a tourist town. So it is ghost town here. Like there's no one here. There's no one coming here. We knew this was going to be a bad year because this started in China. A lot of the business that comes into the Niagara Falls in the summer is with like bus groups that book in China. So they were already not booking. So everyone knew it was going to be a down year, but like it's devastated right now. And the border is now closed for all except for commercial purposes,
Toilet paper trucks,
which is a new thing as of today. Everyone in Ontario went fucking crazy over the weekend and, you know, went and did that whole panic buying of toilet paper and stuff like that. I haven't been to a grocery store in the better part of a week, and I'm kind of dreading having to do it soon.
Sounds like a job for Adam White.
On the plus side, Adam, it's nice to see Trump and Trudeau finally agree on something, you know?
Oh yeah, that's super nice.
That's what counts.
For me in particular, this is gonna fuck me up because my day job is entirely catering to the tourist industry. So like they're dead, we're dead. We sat down and had this emergency meeting with our staff on Monday, and like it's like our staff is like we have like 8 people that work in our office, and we like everyone's working from home right now, except for like 1 or 2 really super young people that are going to our vacant offices right now because I don't know, they don't fear the Reaper like the rest of us. But we're all working from home. Which has been strange and kind of enlightening to see how the team works that way, because like we have like a video conference call every morning, and then everyone just hopefully does some stuff. But we're totally, you know, we are going to run out of things to do because like our phone isn't ringing because our clients are all closed. Our clients basically have laid off all of the people that work there and have shut their doors. So once we kind of mop up, you know, everyone's COVID related work, we might end up in a few weeks having to make some hard choices ourselves because like, you know, there's nothing to do.
I can see this meeting right now. Adam's running the meeting. He's like, the good news is we're not going to start eating any of you yet. The bad news is there's no work.
You got to start with
the worst case scenario so you can let people down easy.
We are making some strange, strange strategic moves in our day to day right now. So we're on the border. So we have clients that are in Niagara Falls, New York, and they're in Niagara Falls, Ontario. One of my partners, my quote unquote boss, he's a dual citizen, so he can usually sneak back and forth over the border with 2 passports pretty easily. But right now, he went over this morning to the States because we knew they were going to announce something regarding the border at like noonish, and he's over there and he's got like a little bit more work to do before he can come back. So he's just like, he's just holed up in some hotel in Niagara Falls, New York, because just staying overnight in the States and then like trying to come home tomorrow with his Canadian passport or whatever would have been easier or more certain than coming home to his house tonight. So it's all kinds of shit like that. It's pretty wacky. And we've had the same sort of artist impact that you guys have talked about where, you know, they're canceling festivals left and right, and you can feel the window creeping. So, you know, everything that was in April is canceled, of course.
You wouldn't buy tickets for anything before June now.
Yeah. So everything April was canceled. Then, you know, the venues that are in town here are all canceled. Like all the good local restaurants and everything like that, they're closed, and they're like desperately trying to shift into a way where they can do some sort of takeout or whatever. I took my mother out for lunch on Saturday, which even that felt like a risk. We went to a restaurant that was on a list of one of the top 10 new restaurants in Canada, and we were the only 2 people in the whole restaurant. And we walked in there and they're like, you have a reservation? And we're like, we need a reservation. Like, it was just like gallows humor from everyone that worked there because they, you know, they're like, this is the end. But yeah, like all the venues, all the music festivals and everything in April are canceled. The ones that are in May are still, they're just like, you can feel them holding their cards close to their chest. So like one of the ones that, our listeners would probably be aware of is PUZA in Montreal, which is the Victoria Day long weekend, right? Yeah. Big giant festival, right? So PUZA hasn't formally called it off yet, but the last statement they made, which was one of these, like, we're going to monitor the situation statements, they made it 5 days ago. And you're like, well, like 5 days, 5 days in this news cycle is like, they may as well have made that announcement in December, right? Like it everything has moved so quickly since then. And then the craziest thing for me right now is that, so I'm looking at this going, man, I hope these like these summer music festivals that I like to go to in August, like aren't somehow affected by this. Like, I hope we figure out how to sort this shit out by then. But, you know, even them, they're all starting to put out statements where they're like, you know, haha, we don't know what's going on right now. And even if, you know, we're all like, let's say best case scenario in 3 weeks or so, we're out of the woods on this. We can emerge back into society. Well, even those summer events, they would have normally announced lineups, you know, 3 weeks ago. You know, they would have had brought in, you know, resources and performers and travel arrangements and all this kind of stuff. Like, it is shortening the amount of organizational time that any of these complex things have to be put together. So I don't know. So yeah. So I've been working from home since Tuesday. So it's only been a couple of days for me so far. I have this like big ridiculous home office thing that I've concocted. I put it directly next to my record player, which I'll get to in a sec. And I, as far as I know, I'm working from home through the end of the month, at least. So different, you know, different shit.
It's funny. I've been crowing, literally crowing. I've been so happy because last year was kind of a slow show year for me. I mean, I still went to a bunch of shows, but I didn't go to a bunch of my very favorite shows. So I was so happy this spring. My ticket envelope, because if I can, I still get physical tickets because I'm an old bastard and I have a collection of them. And my ticket envelope is so thick right now. And literally almost every one of them are already canceled.
Sloppy Seconds, canceled. KRS-One, canceled. Able and the Sniffers, canceled. Brutal. Brutal.
Here's me so far, John. This is stuff I for sure had tickets for. The Queers canceled their tour. Sloppy Seconds canceled their tour. I had back-to-back dates for that. Subhumans have canceled their tour, and Teenage Bottle Rockets have canceled their tour. That's just going through April. Those are the ones that I actually already physically had tickets for. Now, in May, I got Against Me, Annie Flag, GBH, MDC, and Dropkick Murphys, Rancid, and I assume that those are probably all going to get canceled too.
You think that's bad? Listen, I had Bikini Kill, I had Punk Rock Bowling, I had Sloppy Seconds, I had KRS-One, I had World in Front of Friendship Society, Crazy in the Brains, Catbite, Slackers, canceled.
Is it going to affect your show?
Not to be cool, and listen. Having a show getting canceled, honestly, as far as unfortunate events of this, is bottom. Like you know, like people are getting way worse things than that. You know what I mean? But so we recognize that. However, Tom, not to be ghoulish, is if the listeners remember, I was annoyed because the Asbury Park guy announced his show like 10 months ahead of time. So I had to announce mine. Otherwise, I would risk people, you know, planning to go to the Asbury Park one. But that actually might turn in my favor now because everything up – my show's not till August. So hypothetically, I'll be okay. And if I'm not, well, then listen.
We got bigger problems.
Okay.
You know, August, but, yeah. But however, all these things are getting canceled. So that means hypothetically, like this panic or not panic or whatever will be over hopefully by early summer, midsummer. That means people will start booking stuff in August and September. I've already got it blocked out, so people will move around me. Whereas had I waited and normally announced during my four month time frame, maybe I couldn't because people would be too nervous because it's coronavirus, or I'd be fighting with way more people than usual. You know what I mean? So that actually might work in my favor. Mm. Here's the thing, though, is I mean, do you guys think that they're being too extreme? Because a lot of people are losing a lot of money. A lot of people are having a lot of trouble getting money. Are they being too extreme? Or is this what we really have to do to make sure we don't have an Italy or Germany situation on our hands?
Well, see, I heard a public health official, like a virologist kind of guy on the radio the other day. And I've been pretty good about not consuming too much of the news day to day. I've been trying to not consume all the panic news, like all those things where they show the graph of what happened in Italy, say, and then they put the graph of the United States right next to it. And they're like, we're on the same track. We're fucked. Right. Like, I don't know. I can't sit around and look at that all day because it doesn't help me at all. What I think we want, and this is what the guy said, he said, the best case scenario is that like we get the 2 or 3 weeks from now. And then we release that we start to ease the restrictions. And then everyone who was all holed up kind of walks out of that and goes like, well, nothing happened. Like that was a fucking waste of time. Right. And it's just like, well, like that's what you want, right? You want everyone to be mildly annoyed that they were inconvenienced from the whole thing. Because that is like the job is prevention, right? Like the job is that you don't let it get out of hand.
But that's easy to say, though. Like, that's easy to say if you can take 2 or 3 weeks without pay and not be that. But, I mean, it's busting up a lot of people. Honestly, and I'm not trying to be Mr. Doom and Gloom here. I've just by happenstance, I've been in conversations with some record labels. And some record labels that you would think this would not be that big of a deal to are worried that they might not be able to make it through this, which really scared me.
Oh, no, I'm not saying it's serious. I just mean that, like, if the choice is between it's going to fuck up a lot of precarious businesses or the hospitals are going to be overflowing and we won't have anywhere to put the dead, then, you know, I guess we have to take one of those two shitty situations.
But the fear is the reality might, and I'm not saying it is, and I don't think anybody knows, but the fear is there's the third option that it's mostly overreaction and that they could have taking care of this mostly without people losing a month's worth of pay.
For a disease that has a mortality rate of 0.02%.
And I'm not saying that is the case, because, I mean, the problem with the news now, I'm not trying to be Mr. Weirdo, but it's tough to figure out what's real with the news these days and what's not, you know?
I think if we didn't have the example of what had happened in Italy and what had happened in China, and we didn't have those as indicators that were a couple weeks ahead of where we are, I think you'd have a bit of a different read on it, and people would lean on being more conservative in their reaction. But you know, I've got to imagine that there's enough evidence of what could go wrong that we're trying to make sure that doesn't go wrong. So I guess the better question is not so much like, Is this an overreaction to it? It's do you want to bet on it being an overreaction to it? Because I don't really. Like I'd rather bet on.
Yeah, but you don't. But honestly, a lot of people would want to bet that. Like a lot of people that work in bars and nightclubs and that kind of thing probably would bet on it because they're hurting real bad. You know.
Well, I'm concerned. My concern is one, John, that maybe you'll feel me a little more on this because I think Adam and I are. We, for one thing, we're from different countries, and I think we have a different outlook on this. But I am concerned about the government overreach element of this. I mean, essentially, like I said, it's martial law. I don't know if it's justified or not, but I mean, the government's putting people out of business. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But I suspect what I fear, and you call me a paranoid weirdo, whatever. What I fear is, you know, after 9/11, because this kind of feels like 9/11, not as severe. This feels like a week after 9/11, right? Where we're just all kind of walking around going, man, what's going on now? But what happened after that, John? What happened after that, John, was we passed a bunch of laws, and we called them the Patriot Act. They were neither patriotic nor constitutional. And the government surveillance state and everything else has only gotten bigger since then. So you can call me paranoid if you want. That's fine. But the fact of the matter is government's going to implement certain policies that are going to grow the government's control over our everyday lives. And it will never back off once the disease leaves. That's my fear. So
All right. Well.
Nobody wants to speak for or against that position.
No, I mean, I'll speak for or against that position. I was leaving that to the Americans because you guys like to beat your chest about freedom sometimes when the rest of us just kind of, you know.
Well, it is scary to me how.
Screw us, Adam, for valuing people's individual rights and freedoms.
Yeah, screw you for valuing your individual rights, because this is one of these times where, you know what? Fuck the individual, where maybe as a collective we might be able to take some action that keeps us from, you know, killing our grandparents. But hey, individual rights.
We love to throw our liberty on the altar of safety, because if you tell us we're in danger, we're willing to give up almost anything, and then we're no safer and we're less, we have less liberty. So
if you want to choose to be mad,
I'm choosing to be fearful of my government.
But here's what I would be truly fearful. And again, I'm not going to argue at all that that you lost freedom with the Patriot Act that you never got back. Like, I think that's a proven fact, and that's a valid fear. Like, that fear panned out, right? So don't get me wrong there. I agree there. But I think the thing that I would be mad about, and the thing that I am mad about, that is, this is going to be one of these situations where when all the shit hits the fan, the government's going to step in. They're going to start throwing money around to try to right the ship, to try to fix stuff. They're not throwing money to your wife's small business. They're going to throw money to airlines. They're going to throw money to banks. They're going to throw money to all that.
Well, they're talking about individual
payout, which is a whole different thing. You totally just dodged the question, Adam. You said that, you know, Americans love to beat their chest about freedom, blah, blah, blah. And now you're not even talking about that issue. You're talking about something completely different.
Oh, no, okay. I mean, I'll swing back to that. Okay, you guys like to beat chest about freedom.
You're stumbling. You're searching for the words.
I'm not searching for the words. People are going to die because you guys like to hold this up as the be-all and end-all of the human experience. But it's not.
In what context are you talking? In what context? That makes no sense. You're speaking in abstracts that have no actual meaning.
All right, let's go a different direction with this. The millennials are always talking about how we're destroying the planet and how the planet is overcrowded and how we need a good plague to kill people off. Now they got their chance to go out and die, and they're all staying at home like a bunch of cowards. It's time to live your act.
They're all in Florida on the beach like dipshits.
It's time to act your beliefs, guys. It's time to step up and die for the planet, if that's what you think.
Well, speaking of a guy that's not afraid to die, Harley Flanagan.
Or kill. He's not afraid to die or kill.
That's true. He did a show. He was supposed to.
He enjoys his individual freedom to stab a bitch.
He was supposed to open for Ice-T, and he was very Ice-T's body count, and he was very excited about that. But the show got canceled, and so Harley, as well, did a few other bands did the same thing. He streamed a show in his practice space or an empty venue, like some other bands did, and it was really, really well received. And I was surprised at how many websites
it was good. It was good, wasn't it?
Harley's solo show. Here's the thing, and this tags up what we're talking about. I think maybe Harley has finally won the battle, Tom. I think Harley has won the battle over the Cro-Max.
Well, you know, I watched two of these things, John. There's a ton of them going on right now.
Yeah.
These streaming things, which I got to tell you, I don't like. I don't want to watch a show on my phone. I want the visceral experience of going to a show and getting sweat on and beer spilled on me and things. But anyway, his was really good, and I watched the Dropkick Murphys one. It was not very good. Did you see any of that?
No, I'm not watching Dropkick Murphys.
I was sort of watching with like, because I like some of the songs, definitely, but I was sort of like watching it like you slowly watch, you know, them zip a body up on the highway while you're creeping along past the cop cars. That's
I haven't seen either of these, but how were they staged? Because my worry would
be. Well, the Dropkick Murphys one, I assume, was in like the big arena, like where they were. They were supposed to do the St. Patrick's Day show. Of course they were, right? That's their big,
yeah,
their big show, and it was like full production. A friend of mine said this is like multi-camera. Yeah, I would say, but there's no crowd noise, which is so bizarre, you know. So they get done with the songs, and I don't know, Adam. It felt really weird to me. Because, and I understand these people need to try to figure something out, but this is not going to work for me. Watching people's practice spaces on my phone is not going to work as a substitute for me.
Yeah, I've been back and forth on a lot of this stuff, and I think this. I think maybe I'm not the audience for this because, like, I joke all the time on this show about how, like, I'm too busy for three quarters of the things that I try to be involved in. So, you know, being able to sit down and watch a bunch of bands playing over a webcam. Like, I understand the bands can sort of
multitask while you're doing it, right?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, like, I'm not watching them at all right now. So yeah, I'm multitasking by doing all the other things and doing these. But I was trying to think about, like, how could a Dropkick Murphys show with no people at it that's done over a live stream work in a way that's entertaining and works me. And what I was envisioning was maybe more of a practice space sort of thing. Like, maybe you've got, like, you know, a couple guys with cameras and you're in, like, a medium sized room, but the band's not all standing there like they're performing in front of, you know, 10,000 people.
No, it was like they were trying to play a show.
I want to see them have a couple couches set up with, you know, a case of beer, and them sitting there and, like, shooting the shit and talking to the people at home that are watching it, and then they get up and play a song every once in a while. Like, I want the,
it's really like a practice.
But so it's really like a practice space, but maybe it's, like, but it's done in a way that you can actually convey the band's performance and not have it be, you know, sound like total ass. Like, you could do something maybe a little bit more intimate in that situation that would work and be compelling. Like, John,
drink out the acoustic guitars.
Hey, John, you remember you got Jack Terracloth to come, like, drink wine and play music on one of the Punk Juice podcast episodes?
Yeah, and that was the first one where he had a big wacky thing, and much to my chagrin, for the first time ever, they did Nothing You Begin, which they never, ever, ever, ever do. And I was so focused with making that spectacle work, it totally went right over my head. I didn't even mention it. I feel bad about that to this day.
But, like, was the vibe that I think that, like, might make this kind of thing work. But what I'm worried about is that because everyone's trying to scrape these together, you don't have the person in the room helping make a decision that is a video producer, that is a director, right? That is going to actually make the call about, like, how to put that together in a way that's compelling. And I'm worried that a lot of these band performances are like two steps away from, like, weird sex cam stuff. Like, you're going to go look, and it's just gonna be them sitting on their bed, talking to people and
without their pants.
Right. I don't know. Or it's going to be weird, like this Dropkick thing where they played to no one. So
it was weird. I sat there and watched it. I can't say I thought it was good, but I sort of, like I said, like a car crash.
The Harley one was good.
No, the Harley one was.
But I think
watch it for more than an hour. I don't.
No. I think they'll.
Here's the thing with shows. If we're being realistic, and the reason I'm so upset about all these shows being canceled, is because I understand
we wanted to have fun, and now we can't have fun, Tom.
It's a first world problem, right? My bills are paid, but Teenage Bottle Rocket's not coming on tour. I mean, I get that. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to sound like a punk. Like, not a capital P punk, but a little punk who's crying, because the fact of the matter is I'm going to ride this out better than most. And I understand that. And I'm grateful for that. But the truth is I work hard. I work hard to be a dad. I work hard at my job. And these are my little vacations, my one night vacation where I go out and see people I like, and I drink beer and I kind of let it all hang out. And I've lost that. And I haven't been to a show for 2.5 months. And it's like, it just sucks, you know?
I hear you, man. I hear you.
And sitting there watching, you know, Dropkick Murphys or and like I said, I enjoyed the Chromatics thing. I thought it was good. That Harley was kicking ass, man. The guy's 50 years old. He looks like he could still, you know, wrestle a grizzly bear. But and it was kind of entertaining, and I thought they were good. But it was like, it's not gonna fix that for me. You know what I mean? It's not gonna fix that need to go out and see people and drink beer and just do the whole be a punk rocker thing.
That's one thing that like, whenever you watch a video of a band, I've got, for whatever reason, I've been getting like a bunch of live DVDs lately, and like they're cool, but they're not like thrilling. And sometimes you'll see like a show that you were at, and then you'll see it on DVD or video, and on video it looks kind of boring. And you're like, this was not a boring show. I was there. It was crazy. You know, and so there's just something about the video angles makes it less interesting.
Probably once, those, like, I can't watch a DVD. Like, I could watch a DVD of a show. It has no replay value. Like a record or CD or something, I'll just do it over and over again. But I cannot. I just never got into collecting live DVDs other than, you know, like Quentin Tarantino movies or something.
Honestly, I just been picking them up because they're super cheap these days. So I'm like, yeah, $3 for a Rolling Stones video or Cro-Mags video, whatever. Why not? But one thing I do want to address is, I think Harley has kind of won the battle for the Cro-Mags, which I mentioned. You know, 5 years ago, people would say there's no Cro-Mags without John Joseph, or, you know, the Harley mags is not the real mags. No one mentioned that this time.
No, no. Matter of fact, John Joseph seems like he's sort of
retreating,
become marginalized to the point where the only time anybody asks his opinion if it's about some vegan shit.
Yeah, it seems. I would say it's
seriously,
very.
Adam, I mean, I saw a quote from him about, you know, this coronavirus is because people are still eating meat. It's like, okay, dude, whatever.
Ten years ago, like, Harley's like, I'm going to take the Cro-Mags name back. And people were like, oh, that crazy guy, whatever. And he was right. He filed a lawsuit, got the name back, put out a couple of kick-ass 7-inches, is doing some kick-ass shows, and he kind of made come true what he had always said was going to come true. And everybody said he's crazy or loony, and he has no idea what he's talking about.
I don't know. I would love to know how he lost the name in the first place, because John Joseph.
Legally, I think he never did. And that was the point of the
second
lawsuit.
Album as the front man.
Right. Well, see what,
okay.
Trademark is a very, very, what's the word? Amoebic type law. And so it can be very unclear as to who owns the trademark or for what, you know, and there's a lot of factors involved. And so I don't think they ever actually sued each other in that context before. I think the lawsuit to decide that question was last year, and that decided the question, and Harley basically settled in his favor. So.
So our
we've talked about no current news so far other than the virus and
the virus is kind of the dominant news, right? I don't want to get out the virus just yet because I am curious about something. Tom, your job falls into the essential services category, so you have to leave the house and go places, right?
Yes, I am going, unless I get deathly ill, I will be at work.
So I'm working from home because I don't actually do work that's useful to the universe. And
well, I was going to say, there is a physical element to what I do. I cannot work from home. There are things we can do from home. We can monitor things from home. But the truth of the matter is, at the end of the day, buttons have to be pushed remotely.
Right.
I'm sorry. On site.
So all my buttons are remote. So when we decided that I was working from home, I basically like threw three monitors and a computer in the back of my car and drove them to my basement and set them up on a
three block. Monitors? Are you mad, man?
Yeah.
It's like so many monitors. Maybe. Holy cow. I mean, I've worked on these computers with two monitors and I can barely handle it.
Oh, yeah, me too.
So anyways, yeah. All right. I have three monitors.
He's not impressed by us being impressed by his monitors, John.
No. You see, like this comes back to the individual freedom thing. I'm all for the collectivism of monitors. Right. So I got them all set up on.
What if the government tells you that's too many monitors, Adam? You can only have two monitors max.
No, if anything, we'll give monitors to more people. I've got them set up on a bar height table that's sitting here that is within arm's reach of my record player, and this is the room that I've been working out of. It is an impractical place for these things to be in my house, but I decided that if I'm going to live here, if I'm going to be in my house for several weeks and I guess like just live and work here and not leave, I'm going to listen to everything. Like I'm going to, cause I am definitely one of these people that has like a certain amount of like vinyl shame where there are things that I will go by that I'll go hear that I have every intention of listening to, but then like, I may go 6 months or more without ever touching that thing just because, you know, I'm elsewhere. I'm doing something else. I feel bad about this because people in the world are dying and sick and this and that. You know, economies are being crushed and all this, but I'm trying to find the silver lining on this. And my silver lining is that I'm going to sit here next to my record player and listen to records all day long. And I'm 2 days into that. And I got to say, I'm kind of perversely enjoying this. Like, I'm,
you know, it's funny, Adam, because I was having this thought earlier, and I'm sure John can relate to this, that it's like, it's what I've been waiting for my whole life, to be locked at home with nothing to do so I could listen. I mean, I've been just hoarding and accumulating stuff for so long, DVDs and records and CDs and everything else. Like, now's my time and I got to go to work.
Yeah. My wife and I keep joking that, like, if they turn around and close the liquor stores, like it's a different situation. Like fuck hoarding toilet paper.
I'm so glad they sell liquor at the pharmacy because they can't shut down the pharmacies, right?
Liquor stores closed in Philadelphia and Pennsylvania and New Jersey.
No.
Welcome to the police state.
Ontario could get there because, like, our liquor sales are pretty restricted, right? But I think that as far as the government deciding whether they want a panic on their hands, they've reduced the hours in our government-run liquor stores, but they're still open at the moment, so...
Well, I still had to go to work so I can take off at lunch and go over there.
Mm. Mayor Trauma, there's some people trying to get into the liquor store.
Well, like I said, I love that my father has my same. Yes, I would. I mean, obviously, my father would have the same surname as me.
Mayor Trauma, that's cool.
But I've been sitting here for 2 days straight just listening to records. Like, I haven't touched a piece outside of prepping for this show right now. I haven't touched a piece of digital music. Like, I haven't needed
to. You prep for the show?
Well, I'd be like, I listen to the song. Well, I listened to this fucking NoFX song we're going to talk about. Like, that's.
Are we still going to talk about that?
Yeah, we got to talk about that. But in a way, I keep knocking on wood because I'm like, you know what? If we get out of this, you know, with all of like me and mine still being, you know, healthy and
Adam's like, I'm only in the H's.
Yeah, I'm like, in a way, I'm having a great time right now. So, it feels bad to say it, but you know, you gotta make lemonade.
Well, listen, talk about making lemonade. Let's play some tunage here. Tom, you got a song?
Do you want to go last?
Yeah, I'll go. Do you specifically want to go last?
No, I forgot all about it after we talked about it. But you know what? Let me. I'm trying to, you know, so many bands had to cancel their tours, and I do feel really, really quite awful about it. We should play a song by one of these bands that had to cancel their tours, but I'm not very prepared. Let's do a Subhuman song.
Because they had to
cancel their tour. Let's do the very appropriate, one of my favorites. Let's do British Disease. By the Subhuman. So this is Subhuman's British Disease.
Hatred in the hearts of the young population, riots in the streets of the civilized nation. Was it the poverty? Was it the police? No, it's the British Disease. We'll be right back.
And that with the subhumans, UK subhumans, with Dick Lucas doing British Aziz. And listen, we got some contemporary news stories we want to hit here. First of all, NoFX has released a new video. They also said they're going to release a new album this summer. They don't know when it's going to come out. So they're releasing songs and videos before then, which is kind of what like record labels do. So I don't know why they were kind of saying this was like a special thing. I will say the video is very highly produced, so I don't think this is quite as off the cuff as they wanted us to make it seem. That being said, the new song is called I Love You More Than I Hate Me. And the video shows the band committing suicide in various ways, and a lot of the Fat Records bands kind of acting as secondary characters in the video. I will say, I thought the video was great. I mean, I like how Fat Records I don't even like most of Fat Record bands shown in the video with NoFX, but I like how it's kind of like Hellcat Records, circa 2002. It's like a posse. It's like, this is the scene, this is the crew, these are the pals all hanging out. So I dug that. And also, I really liked how we live in an age where suicide is handled with extreme kid gloves. And it probably should be. It's a very, very real issue. And it's maybe something we didn't quite understand as much in the 70s and 80s and 90s. And a lot of bands used to have funny songs about suicide and that kind of a thing. And now it's handled a little much, much more delicately.
Richard killing himself was all fun and games until your neighbor did it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Or Richard hung himself, sorry. Boy, yeah. I should have played Richard hung himself.
Is that Dr. No or the Freeze?
D.I.
Oh, D.I. Yeah, yeah. The reason I forget get confused because it's on Slayer's covers album.
It's on the Slayer's cover album. There's actually a demo version of it, and an Adolescence demo version of it too.
Oh wow!
Because Casey was the drummer from the Adolescence, went left and became the singer for DI.
Casey Royer.
Yes.
The interesting thing about this video is the band handles suicide with a fair amount of comedic relief. Like, for example, Smelly drowns himself in the pool, and then somebody puts like a beer on his behind as he's upside down in the water. El Jefe hangs himself.
El Jefe hangs himself.
And while he's hanging himself, someone takes a chair out from him and uses it to sit on. And like all these people are having fun around the band while the band is killing themselves. And I thought the video was kind of funny, but also poignant and fairly artistic, and I dug it. That being said, and it's somewhat dangerous in that, is making light of suicide acceptable at all, even if it's in the name of art? I thought this video made a pretty good case that it is, if it's done the correct way. And I thought the video was really cool. And also, I think it's cool how the video had extremely high production values, but it clearly wasn't that expensive of a video to make, which I think is cool. You can make a good looking video for pretty cheap these days. All that being said, I didn't think the song was very good.
Well, you and I had totally different reads on this. I mean,
go ahead.
I'll agree that the song isn't very good, but I think the song not being very good sort of plays into the whole thing, which is that, I mean, on a general standpoint, I can't latch on to whatever the current NoFX vibe is. Like, I don't know what the band's intent is. So the song is, it never veers into NoFX being like the obnoxious goofball version of themselves, which is fine, but it's not acerbic, right? It's not angry. It's just, it's kind of emo. Like that's
Cokie the Clown, dude. It's Cokie the Clown creeping in.
That's kind of like if we saw some big dumb hair band in 2006 making a high production value video where everyone in the band kills themselves in a way that is like, I guess like there's a few comedic beats to it, but it's for the most part just like just kind of depressing. We'd be all over that as being like look at these like melodramatic emo bands, but because it's Mike that is doing that and Mike's Mr. Punk, I guess he gets a certain amount of pass, where if it was, you know, My Chemical Romance doing this, we would have been shitting all over it. I'm not really ready to give him that. So
I think you can't discount the artist, and I think you can't discount the funny parts either.
I'm not discounting them. I just don't think that they were enough that it made a difference for me. Because, like, I watched this thing, and I'm definitely not one to try to kid gloves mental health issues. Like, if anything, I am constantly, but maybe privately, you know, annoyed by the overperformance of like mental health concerns within like the alternative music scene in particular. Like you can't do anything without there being a giant mental health conversation at this point.
Which seems
like disproportionate maybe to the amount that that is a factor in what we're talking about. But just watching this, like I was just like, I'm like, this is unpleasant. Like it's not unpleasant because they're making, like, they're not making fun of all this suicide stuff in a way that is in like a classic 70s punk way, you know, like really daring. Like they're not trying to like stick a finger in your eye to really tweak you about this. Most of the suicide stuff is like kind of realistically portrayed. And it's not, they're not messaging about suicide in particular either. So it doesn't go into moralizing. It just happens multiple times in this video. And I don't get it. Like, I don't get why I'm watching these horrible, unpleasant things happen to this band. And perhaps the song was just unengaging enough for me that I didn't put two and two together there. But I don't know. Like I don't know what they're going for. And if this is the
I think the mere fact that you're asking that question shows that it's pretty good art.
I mean, I guess, but it doesn't challenge me, and I don't like it. I don't this song and this video, the whole vibe of NOFX right now doesn't feel like one that I care to go on because it's unpleasant. And I mean, I get that art can be challenging and unpleasant, but like I listen to a lot of my music primarily for for enjoyment, for catharsis, you know, but I don't listen to it because I want it to be unpleasant. And this is unpleasant. That's my read. My beer's dead. I mean, Tom, you've watched 18 seconds of this video and haven't had time to process it, but so it's not totally fair. But what do you think, Tom?
Yeah, it is pretty unpleasant. It, you know, the early stuff where NOFX was so good, it always had like a tongue-in-cheek humor to it. This just does seem pretty. Still, obviously, a bit of but yeah, I mean, it doesn't really do much for me. I mean, I don't think I'm not a person who thinks that anything is sacred or can be made fun of. So I'm not as tragic and personal and awful as suicide is. I don't even have a problem with them making fun of it. I just doesn't really do much for me. You know, it doesn't really make me laugh. It doesn't make me, you know, I'm not inspired by the song. There's just nothing there to really, you know, excite me.
Well, they have three opinions on the art of NOFX. You should watch it yourself and decide. I think we all agree that the song, you know, I think we all want more songs. Like, was it 7 years on Dope as opposed to this melodic emo type stuff? But hey, listen, man, we'll see. Lawrence Arms, they finished recording a new album. A lot of people were excited at Punk News. But here's the question is, I think you guys are both Lawrence Arms fans. Is the Lawrence Arms age over?
We are.
I guess you're not. I thought you were, Tom. So, I mean, the question is,
Adam, are you?
I was.
Okay.
The beard punk era is over. That being said, there are still the remnants of that. Just like
my beard is longer than ever, but the era is over. Yes.
You know, like there's still hardcore. There's still ska. You know, and generally the biggest bands of those eras are the ones that carry on over. The Lawrence Arms, is the audience still there for them? Will they still have something to say if they maintain their general aesthetic and style and don't do something weird and crazy, if you will?
I'm sure.
Yes.
People still like them. I watched them headline a small festival last summer. They're very wildly popular. And don't get me wrong, I don't have anything against them. I didn't mean to come off as being like a Lawrence Arms hater, but I never could get into them. I don't know what it is. Something about them.
I was a fan.
Just don't strike a chord with me.
I was a big fan of this band back in the day. Their last record that came out in 2014, it did nothing for me, but it did nothing for me in a way that is probably entirely because I was off on a different tangent at the time and not really paying attention to that kind of music. But John, I think your question about whether people care too much about the Lawrence Arms these days is colored a little bit by the fact that you've never really cared about the Lawrence Arms.
That's true. I mean, I don't dislike them.
Yeah, I mean, it's legit.
I don't dislike them. It's just not my style. And I actually think most of the guys in the band are pretty interesting fellows, but it's not my style, you know?
No, see, you're pretty much the same page as I am, John. It's just, I don't have anything against them. I don't hate them like I do a Blink-182 or something. I just don't get into it.
The Lawrence Arms have never offended in a way. They've never offended because, like, they've never been I'm guilty right now of using offense in a couple different ways in two different conversations here. They have never been an annoyance. Their fans definitely would have been an annoyance during a certain era of punk news when they were kind of beatified as one of these holy bands that can do no wrong and that we must talk about every 45 seconds. But the band themselves, I think, have pretty much been they've been true to what they do, and they have not overstayed their welcome. Like the Lawrence Arms in my head are in the same category of, say, a band like, I'm going to say, like Dillinger Four, or even like going back a little bit, like someone like a Veil or something like that, where they're going to have really, you know, they're going to have a dedicated fan base that's going to really love them. They're probably not going to exceed that fan base, but the band themselves are, you know, they are fine. You can like the music or not. As opposed to, say, a Blink-182 that would get like genuinely too much in all of our faces when we didn't need them to be.
Dude, I've been listening to the radio. I don't have any CDs in my car at the moment. And I heard one of the newer Green Day songs on the way home from work today. And if somebody had been in the road, I would have run them over.
Was it the song
about? It drove me to violence. It was the Gary Glitter one.
Oh, I don't know. I actually heard the one where like he's singing about like boyfriends and girlfriends. I actually really like that song, to tell you the truth.
I don't know that one. I mean, I try to avoid like the plague, but it was the one where they steal the Gary Glitter chorus, which was covered by Joan Jett. It's
Do You Want to Touch Me? Touch Me? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I say, oh, no. Oh, no, well, I don't.
Well, that's what most people said to Gary Glitter, if you know what I'm saying.
Hey, listen. Whatever.
Let's talk about Gary Glitter real quick. So Gary Glitter was kicked out of literally like five countries for being a pedophile, and now he's in an English jail, as he should be.
Yes.
And I'm just astounded at the audacity of Gary Glitter. He gets kicked out of one country for being a pedophile. So instead of saying to himself, I mean, and that's absolutely reprehensible and pretty much the worst thing there is to be a pedophile. But instead of him saying, man, I got to get my shit straightened out, instead of him doing that, he's like, no, I'll just go to another country and keep doing what I'm doing. He gets kicked out of another country.
You think being ejected from Vietnam for underage sex trade, purchasing would be a wake-up call, right?
You think so? But no, he just goes to Singapore and then Cambodia.
John, I bet you he's the type of guy when he gets pulled over by the the British popo, whatever they call him, the Bobby cops, the Bob, or whatever. He says, "Do you know who I am?"
Everyone knows who he is now.
He starts humming, goes, "No, no, 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 no." The cops just let him go. Works every time.
We were talking about whether or not the Lawrence Arms are still relevant. Speaking of another band that's still wildly relevant, Modern English are going on tour. And if you say, John, who's Modern English? That's Stop the World, All Melt With You.
They were a one-hit wonder, but they were a pretty good band.
So they're going on tour for the 40th anniversary, and they're playing their album After the Snow in full. I think that's their second album, might be their third. The surprising thing about Modern English is that even though they have got that one big hit, the album actually doesn't sound like that at all. The album actually sounds a lot like Joy Division meets New Order, kind of not quite as heavy as Joy Division, but not quite as danceable as New Order. And honestly, like their early catalog is very, 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 very good. And so I'm just mentioning that is John's got one of these fascinations with these 80s one-hit wonder bands that are actually like really good. Flock of Seagulls, Bow Wow Wow. I'm running out of examples. but
Psychedelic Furs were very good.
Modern English is actually a pretty cool band, and I'm excited. If they make it on tour, I'll definitely be checking out them on tour.
They'll probably be on some, like, 80s cruise, like, 80s-themed cruise ship or something.
I saw Flock of Seagulls at it was, like, Live the 80s Party, and it was, like Bananarama and all the other bands. And honestly, Flock of Seagulls.
Yeah, and they played, like, 50 minutes.
With all the bands, except for Flock of Seagulls, did a full-hour set, and it was amazing. Like all the bands, like, really 80s did up, but Flock of Seagulls kind of came out in, like, all black. It's really just one guy and, like, dudes, you know. And they came out in all black, and they, like, did it seriously and not tongue-in-cheek, and it was awesome. Anyway, speaking of things that are awesome and not tongue-in-cheek, well, this is sad. It's awesome music. Janis Peorage of Throbbing Gristle and Psychic TV has passed away. Genesis was battling leukemia for 2 or 3 years. And so Genesis had been sick for a while, so people could kind of saw this coming. It's hard to overstate the radical influence that Genesis and Throbbing Gristle and Psychic TV had on music. I mean, if you listen to Throbbing Gristle, it's not very easy listening music. It's extremely challenging music. Psychic TV, some of it's challenging, some of it's very listenable. And so it's sad anytime anybody dies of cancer, for sure. It said that Genesis passed away. I did see, as whenever one of these kind of edgy people passes away, you always see I saw someone said, you know, let's not forget how great Genesis Peorage was, but also don't forget Genesis history with this person, you know. So always the kind of the hit pieces that always come out when someone passes away, you know, same with David Bowie, same with some other people. And I don't know if you guys have anything to say about the passing of Genesis or anything like that, or.
She's not barely on my radar, I must say.
Well, Adam, anything you want to say about Genesis, or we want to wrap it up?
I mean, if for nothing else, the outpouring of I'm never sure what the right word is here. The tributes that I saw come from artists where they had put together cover songs or whatever else were generally all artists that I'm really into. And I mean, they were generally covering Psychic TV songs as opposed to Throbbing Gristle noisescapes, but it really made me want to go back and revisit at least some of the Psychic TV catalog that I haven't heard before, because I feel like there's probably a lot there that I'd be really into given what I'm into now. So it's on the list.
Yeah, the Psychic TV catalog is massive. We're talking hundreds of albums, and that's because they would record, like, almost all their live shows, and they'd be totally different than the albums. So they would just put them out as albums. So we'll play a site. Well, we'll wrap it up, and then we'll close with a classic Throbbing Gristle track. So, Tom Trauma, anything you want to mention? Anything you want the listeners to know, or how you going to make it through?
Right. Check out the new Punk News, the Punk News podcast on Facebook. I'm still doing my other podcast, so I don't want people to not listen to this podcast to listen to that one instead, but I still want people to check out the Punk Till I Die podcast, and we also have a Facebook and all that stuff. So anyway, I'm still double dipping, and I'm still enjoying hanging out with multiple crews. So, but that was it. Little commercial.
Adam, anything you want the listeners to check out or know or anything along those lines?
Okay, yeah, here. But my whole time being home, in self-imposed isolation from the world, I've been posting this stupid Instagram series that I'm calling Some Party Quarantine Radio, where I'm just photographing the various records that I'm listening to as I'm listening to and posting a dumb little quip about them. And more than a few times as I've done that, one of the artists whose record I'm playing has come and chimed in with something interesting. So if you want to see what exact records I'm listening to, because you don't want to live your own life, but instead you want to live vicariously through my life, you can find me on Instagram at Adam White.
There you have it. Adam White. And let's close up with a Throbbing Gristle track. We'll play their first single, the better known half of their first single. This is Throbbing Gristle. I'm sorry. Oh, one thing I wanted to mention about Genesis before we close up. It's crazy Genesis is how Genesis existed in the background before people even knew who Genesis really was. Like, Genesis went out with Sue Catwoman. Genesis is on a UFO cover, the band UFO. And if you look around, like, the early punk scene, Genesis crops up all over. It's crazy. Anyways, this is a classic Throbbing Gristle track. This is Cyclone B Zombie, and we'll see you next week.
Hey!